Welcome to Backlog Dialogues, the podcast that digs you out of your backlog before it buries you. I'm John, and joining me as always are two fellow Ava pilots who are also going through some shit.
I mustn't fall asleep.
Oh no.
It seems Jared has entirely retreated into himself, so
oh, no.
I'm Matt, and our slightly catatonic friend here is Jared.
What are you, stupid? No.
What?
Antabaka?
Just oof.
Today we are talking about Neon Genesis Evangelion. Only the original series. We're not going to talk about End of Eva or Rebuild of Evangelion as much as I'd like to talk about those as
or
well.
Or the manga or the Silly Angelic Day spinoff based on that one scene from 26 or the video games.
We're just going to talk about the base TV series to keep this discussion relatively self-contained.
We might reference like a couple things that are in End or something, but we're not going to fully talk about
it. Yeah, no. This is mostly for the original. And so up front, I just want to ask this question, guys. Do we need a spoiler alarm for the first time ever in one of these mini logs?
The spoiler statute of limitations on Evangelion has long passed, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame because we could really put it with the Angel Attack music and everything and use that alarm.
Yeah. That being said, if you haven't watched Eva, watch Eva. It rips. And actually, so I want to talk about our history with the series because I've taken the weirdest route possible for experiencing this series, guys. My introduction to the series was the first four episodes way back in the day when I was still getting into anime. I went to an anime club in my high school where they had a weird Scottish parody fan dub of episode 8, which is the episode that introduces Asuka, if you remember. My friends that were introducing me to anime also had a parody fan sub of episode 1. Then someone got me to watch End of Eva. I don't remember who. So just think about this for a second. I've only seen the first four episodes, not real versions of a few other episodes, and then the second ending to the series, if you will. Then I didn't touch Evangelion for years. Then I watched Rebuild as it was coming out. And Rebuild is actually sort of like what kindled my Evangelion fandom. It made me get it in a way that I didn't quite get it with the original stuff that I'd watched. I watched Rebuild 1 through 3 as they came out. Then when it came out on Netflix, I believe Jared and I watched through episode 12.
And I believe I said, yep, and that's the end of the fun part. And we just never quite got back to it because we're both very distractible.
And so then I watched Rebuild of Evangelion 4, which is amazing. It is a wonderful movie. And then finally, to prepare for this episode of this podcast, I finally went back and watched the whole series. Well, it's not the entire manga series. I've only read half of it. What I'm trying to say is, right before this, I was the biggest Eva fan, excited to watch Evangelion for the first time.
So, yeah. Eva's got an interesting spot for me, too. My early anime experience is kind of silly and TV based. I got mildly hooked on a single arc in Sailor Moon and then Dragon Ball Z, of course, because those are English things. Eva is one of the first two or three series I ever watched in Japanese. My brother was from college and gotten several burned CDs. Yes, that's really the level we're talking about. I'm ancient.
Yes.
I actually think I watched it before when End of Eva was just coming out, if you think about it, because this would have been before 2000.
I can actually beat you because I actually somewhere have, I think, fifth generation fan dubbed VHS tape somewhere in a cellar somewhere.
Oh, geez.
I mean, I used to tape all of Dragon Ball Z off onto my own VHSs for God knows why. I remember doing it up through the cell arc.
I think I'm the youngest one of us, aren't I?
It's not by much, though. We're not talking about this coming January.
No.
Then I watched End of Eva. I distinctly remember in my brother's dorm room, I went to visit him. He had it. And then I watched Rebuild around saying that was John. I never got to 4.
You were more annoyed with Rebuild 3 than I was. I loved Rebuild 3.
Eva has a way to annoy me, fairly or not. Something about Rebuild 3 just made me feel like, oh, we're going through this again. I just didn't like how...
You need to go back and give it another chance. Seriously.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. And beyond that, like I said, and then I spent a lot of my childhood also, a lot of my college years being poisoned by weird fan fiction. But that's besides the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt. So for me, similar to Jared, I also watched fan subs when I was a teenager and the end of Eva when I was in college. Honestly, when I was younger, I didn't really see what the big deal about Eva was. I think I mentioned before that I had a problem with Final Fantasy VII. Kind of, I felt that Cloud was being kind of whiny.
You didn't get his deal.
Yeah, I didn't get his deal. And Shinji had a lot of the same attributes, I think. So it kind of shared in that overall annoyance for me.
We'll be able to talk about that in a bit.
But then I went and saw the Rebuild series and really enjoyed the Rebuild series. I haven't watched 4 yet, but I really loved 1 through 3. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I didn't really give the original series a fair shake. I should rewatch it again someday. And so when John wanted to rewatch Evangelion for this episode, we just did it together. And it was a lot of fun. And I actually was, in fact, correct that my teenage self wasn't quite ready to get a lot of the character drama that was going on.
I mean, I'm not gonna die. My teen self almost actively rejected it.
Yeah, like this is not a mecha series first. This is a character drama series with mecha in the background. Every single episode in the first half of the series is mostly about how do we solve problems with giant robots, but it's actually really about this is this one character's particular deal and their problems and what we're going to talk about later on in the series.
Basically, the first few episodes are targeting, if weak points and targeting.
Yes.
Yeah. But there's, you know, just to drive home that point, there's that one episode where Asuka can't work with Shinji and Misato basically forces them to do everything together in order to make them be able to stand each other and eventually do it. And so it seems like that's, you know, a Monster of the Week episode where, you know, this is how they deal with the angel. But instead, it is actually about Asuka's deal.
Yeah. So before we get any more details like that, let's quickly give a quick summary. Just like, as we said, the statute of limitations on this series has long since passed. This is the way I would like to describe this series to people. In the not so distant future of 2015, Earth is under attack from mysterious monsters called angels, and the only thing that can stop them are giant artificial humans called Eva units piloted by children. Things don't go well.
Somehow we managed to destroy Tokyo twice, and we're on the third one.
Well, Tokyo, the first, was destroyed in the second impact, as I recall. Rather, the second impact caused the sea levels to rise, so Tokyo was completely submerged. The capital got moved to Tokyo 2, and then Neo Tokyo 3 was built specifically for combating the angels. That's the top-level summary of Evangelion. Like, deeper down, it is very specifically a character drama focusing on various characters that each represent different, relatable aspects of the human psyche, problems that we have, and shows how they grow and change and kind of fall apart at the end.
I mean, if you want to describe what might have been the original pitch, it's like they looked at series like the original Mobile Suit Gundam, where you get a young boy or a teenager forced to fight a giant robot, and you think, what would that actually be like?
Yeah, yeah.
The answer is horrifying.
Yeah. Let's go over those characters real quick. So the main character of the series is, of course, Shinji Ikari. And I want to say up front to all the people out there that I know are ready and aching to go with those memes, Shinji, you don't have to get in the robot. In fact, please stop getting in the robot. I know it is the only thing that gives you fulfillment in life. Stop getting in the robot.
Those days are over. You don't have to sell your body to the fight. Shinji, you don't have to wear that plug suit tonight.
That is genuinely terrible.
That is why I proposed. That is the episode title. There's a lot about Shinji. Shinji is one of the most complex and interesting characters in all of fiction.
Let's start with the fact that he's a extremely withdrawn, nervous character whose name means rage.
Yes, believe in rage.
Because frankly, I'm going to say this as politely as I can. Shinji is a personality type where I believe if in a normal life, if he didn't get therapy, he might someday completely go on an implosive breakdown.
I mean, so he has a very conflict avoidant personality. He gets through life just by doing what he's told. He finds fulfillment in following orders.
But he's also extremely resentful. He has a huge streak of resentment over people not needing him or people just using him.
Yeah.
But he also feels, which kind of clashes with that feeling of being needed.
Yeah.
Specifically, he has daddy issues really bad because
he
tries to find fulfillment in following orders, specifically because people do, in fact, praise him when he does a good job at doing those things. He really wants to believe that if he does those things, that his father will pay attention to him. And in fact, need him because he more or less felt like his father abandoned him after his mother's death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he internalized that as it being his fault for not being useful enough.
Yeah.
So he despises his father's for doing it, but he also blames himself. So he's just got this horrible toxic stew of emotional concerns.
And I think he even says at one point, like, no matter none of the praise that he gets from anyone other than his dad really matters to him. Like, he even says, all I want is my dad to say that to me.
Like, you'll see him respond positively to others, but it doesn't last. Like, he can't really hold on to the positive emotion. He, unfortunately, displays extreme depressive behaviors and tends to sink into that as well.
And he goes through two near-death experiences that sort of psychoanalyze him before the final episode of the show that really psychoanalyzes him.
We never really get much of an idea of what Shinji is doing before he comes to Nerve. Mm-hmm. Because the only thing we get is that he was living with his teacher or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of resistance in him to actually leaving. And, you know, it almost feels like if he leaves this situation, he will figuratively die.
Yeah.
Like he will no longer exist.
Yeah.
He constantly talks about things like he can play the cello at a semi-expert level based on the piece he claims he can play.
Yeah.
But he says that he just picked it up and no one told him to stop, so he just does it now again. Like, he downplays everything.
Yeah. And, like, one of the things that's just most striking to me about him is how little of his interiority we really get until, like, the later half of the series.
Like, we mostly just hear what he says out loud to himself. Even if it seems like internal monologue, like, it's more what he's speaking.
Like, he keeps the viewer at arm's distance at all times. And I think that's really fascinating, especially compared to what we were just going through in Higurashi, where, like, we really got to see Keiichi's interiority up front and center.
But a lot of it is, in fact, intentional here, because if we actually saw what Shinji was thinking at early places, it would ruin a lot of the character development that happens later on.
Yeah.
It would also ruin a lot of the early episodes, too, because honestly, in many ways, Shinji is a coward.
Oh, yeah.
But it's understandable because everything he's going through is really scary.
Well, but every time we do get a little bit of hint of what he's thinking, it's always like in a little aside angry comment.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I mean, the reality is deeply unfair to Shinji. He tries, like in the very first episode, he's nakedly manipulated by his father and others to do something incredibly dangerous. But he does it because he thinks he can help someone. And he's rewarded with trauma, extreme pain, including the impalement of his eye mentally, and just horrifying imagery of what appears to be his own body or an avatar of it destroying massive areas and just savagely murdering what's in front of it.
Like,
he never really fully internalized that. He never can have the same confidence Eve again, no matter what he tries.
Shinji is never really told about all of the dangers of piloting the Evangelion. Not ever.
Nope.
And the viewer gets a lot of more view of that with, it almost seems like throwaway scenes in a lot of cases that are just filler. But, you know, all of the scenes of the support staff who are actually monitoring the operations of the Eva in combat and stuff like that. You know, there's talk about mental contamination and all of these other horrible neurological things that are happening to Shinji in the Eva. And Shinji is kept completely in the dark about all of this. He can experience it, but he's never told that there's a danger of mental contamination.
To be honest, he's told nothing. Like, the weird thing about the story is that the plot goes on over his head, and he never has any hope of being provided information about it. So,
speaking of that, let's talk about the character that I was surprised to find out was actually the secondary protagonist in Misato. Like, I was not expecting going into watching the full series just how much she is actually, like, the one trying to figure out what's actually going on. She's the highest-ranked character in Nerve that is not told anything about what's happening. She is not in on the plan.
Yeah, essentially, she is the person in charge of all the military operations and combat, but she has nothing to do with the behind the scenes conspiracy that Gendo and Nerve and Ritsuko are all involved in making.
Yeah. There's that one episode where they have the
competitor company making their own mecha.
Yeah, yeah.
Jet alone.
She has to solve all these problems, and then Ritsuko is going behind her back. It's pretty clearly implied that Ritsuko is the one that sabotaged everything.
Or at least Nerve did, and Ritsuko was just there as representative.
Yeah.
But she knew what was going on. You know, at first, Misato was chiding Ritsuko for appearing childish in the speech, and then... But Ritsuko just kind of took it because she knew what was going to happen in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ritsuko kind of chides Misato for being childish, trying to fix this all on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes through all of this risk and danger to do it. And she finds out in the end that their mecha was sabotaged and it could only have been Nerve that did it.
Like, Misato is another deconstruction. She's kind of the cool mom, cool teacher type character as the superior officer. But because of that, what we have is a rather emotionally stunted woman who's barely functioning alcoholic as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Deeply traumatized and unable to really take care of her charges completely because she's so deeply distorted by her own issues. And then she throws herself into it and kind of, unfortunately, kind of does a hash of it.
Yeah, we do kind of get the idea that Misato was an orphan from a very young age.
What was it? Her father died in the Second Impact, as I recall?
She's basically the only living witness of Second Impact is the implication.
Yeah, and like the scene of her being sent away after that, I'm like, oh, I've seen this scene remixed in so many anime and video games.
Misato becomes a character archetype after Evangelion, to the length of Shinji or Rei. But there's definitely a lot of Misatos out there. In fact, John is currently having me play Trails of Cold Steel. And I was laughing because there is, in fact, a Misato in that story.
Yep. Instructor Sarah. We'll get to talk to her in the next series of that we get to in. That's probably going to be several years away. Wow. Anyway, what else can we say about Misato?
I kind of feel like a lot of her deal is that she wants to solve everything, but she doesn't have the capability to. And that explains why at the beginning that she takes Shinji in. She really is like, poor kid. The least I can do is try to take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
But she can't take care of him.
I mean, she's not taking care of herself. Her home is kind of a disaster.
Yeah, like it takes Shinji actually like coming in to do some cleaning to even like get her apartment in a livable state.
Yeah. Like she has a decent amount of empathy. She worries about others, but because the fact is that she is not at all put together, she just takes on things she can't.
Yeah. She throws herself into work and to helping others because she is not capable of taking care of herself is probably the best way I'd put it.
And unfortunately that makes her emotionally vulnerable. Like her relationship with Kaji ends up toxic, not entirely due to just his actions, but because she doesn't see boundaries and she can't really handle anything that's going on around her there either.
Mm.
She also has daddy issues pretty bad too.
Oh yeah. Every one of these characters kind of like is chasing after the previous generation is the best way I have to put it.
Yeah.
I mean, when we go on to the character that's generating faster than anyone else.
Oh dear. Yeah. Let's talk about Rei.
Yeah. I mean, let's just go full on the spoilers here, because Rei's context is all on exactly what she is.
Yeah. Rei starts off as just seeming a mysterious, quiet girl that is asked to pilot the mechas, and she doesn't complain about it when asked to do that.
She seems like she has extremely stunted emotions, not even to a level that is surprising for people with severe mental health issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like she starts the show severely injured from an incident we only see later in flashback, and that actually she spends several episodes still recovering.
Mm-hmm.
In that time, she doesn't emote at all. She barely speaks. She lives by herself in a what looks like not a great environment either.
Yeah, like her apartment is just like barren is the best way.
Very austere. Yeah,
but it also has things like bloody bandages carelessly left around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's also. Looks unpleasant.
So, but like, we do find out that she is kind of Gendo's favorite.
Yeah.
And
they go into spoilers as they cover this.
Yeah, Gendo shows her way more concern than he ever shows Shinji.
There's one actual scene that's kind of a turning point where Rei is speaking with Gendo and both of them are smiling. And that is something that clearly Shinji has never really experienced.
Like, and we don't even see what they're saying. It's Shinji seeing it from outside.
We later find out that Rei is a series of Reis, all clones.
Yeah, we have a whole aquarium full of Reis.
Yeah.
Going straight, Rei is a weird, slightly angelically corrupted copy of Shinji's mom.
Yeah. Unpack that one for a while, guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Gendo is protective of her and sometimes acts like a father figure in her mind, but yeah. And yeah, then Shinji's drawn to her as well and has awkward naked meetups with her once or twice.
Ha ha, Oedipal.
Oh, no.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. And then we find out that this Rei is like the second one alive, and then she actually ends up killed 3/4 through the series and replaced.
And we get a new Rei out of the gate that doesn't remember everything and says, like, a previous version of me probably did that.
Yeah. And then we find out the first Rei came out as a child was a mean-spirited little lunatic that drove a woman to murder her by taunting her weaknesses.
Yeah, yeah. That, so that's
what
just,
the hell?
Yeah, that was fucked up.
Rei is what you get when you make a person as an adult, even though they don't really have any real memories. They have, like, the ability to understand language and, like, the vague idea of who and what they are, but they don't really have any life experiences that allow them to
contextualize it,
to contextualize anything. So they seem very non-emotive. And that is one of the reasons also, I think, that the Reis are so loyal to Gendo, because
he's the only
person that they know and can feel they can trust, because he's the first person they met.
Funny thing is, that's Rei too, like the one we know for the series.
Yeah.
The one who we watch slowly start learning about what it could be to be a complete person, that it's cruelly taken away because she's human enough to sacrifice herself for others.
Yeah.
Rei 3 is basically a factory reset model.
Yep.
And I'll just say, at the end of Eva, interestingly, she actually doesn't have much time for Gendo after all.
Mm.
She had that one that with no loyalty and no particular interest at the start ends up not going along with Gendo at the very end.
Well, yeah, I think Rei 2 had much more time to be with Gendo and time to learn things more or less. Well,
he also destroyed his hand, saving her life. So
yep. Yeah, that's, but also like, also keep in mind that like Rei 2 is also impacted by interacting with Shinji and also Asuka, who we'll talk about in a bit.
Well, from Asuka, she learned that some people can just be kind of awful.
Well, Asuka, I relate to a bit too much. She is.
There's depths to Asuka, and I like her, but she is kind of awful a lot of the time.
Well, so Asuka,
she deals with her shit by trying to foster an inflated self opinion of herself.
Yes,
almost onto narcissism.
Like
when you scratch at Asuka's surface beneath the bluster, beneath the cockiness and the demanding, overpowering personality, she actually has even more intense fear of being worthless than Shinji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she needs to be useful, not just because, like, following orders gives her fulfillment. She needs to be useful because, like, that is the only thing that gives her life meaning.
She has built herself into this identity of herself with Eva as something special, something unique and heroic.
Yeah.
And she's kind of completely lost any ability to see it any other way.
And so then when Shinji starts, like, getting better and doing better at fighting, she starts just, like, aggressively, like, getting in his face about it and, like, shouting about, oh, the great Shinji can handle it, of course. Like, she's unable to, like, conceptualize, oh, other people can be good at things, too, and it doesn't take away from me being good at things. She has a very zero-sum view of the world.
And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, too.
Yeah.
Her scores start to degenerate to a point that she can't even control the Evangelion in the end.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to feel stress and it's breaking her down, so it's having a feedback loop. Then a giant light bird completely rips apart her emotional defenses and just basically leaves her with no self-control or trust left. And she's been spending this whole time, like, she projects a brutally hard exterior. Like, she sees herself as she has to be the aggressor. The opening scene does a cheap panty shot joke, and so she starts hitting them and saying that's the fee for it. Like, say, I'm in charge and I'm going to be confident, but I'm still going to hurt you. And she deliberately, repeatedly humiliates Shinji. I'm going through all that to point out that's how she relates to things. So the second she starts feeling weakness in herself, it would have shattered even without the aforementioned mental attack. But that just accelerated.
Yep. I want to say, like, all these characters up till now, I've just been kind of like, I relate to these people in weird and strange ways, and I don't know what that says about me, but it's like, all these, they are all built from various, like, neurological issues that people have. They're constructed out of that, like, how people behave. They all end up feeling very real because of that. Now let's talk about the weird one. let's talk about Gendo.
Yeah.
Shinji's dad.
Yeah. So Gendo Ikari is the bad end of life.
Yes.
He made all the wrong choices, and now he's a villain, and it's just dumb.
Like,
Gendo is interesting to me because, like, the first time I saw Evangelion, one of my criticisms was that Gendo gets almost no characterization other than just being involved in this conspiracy stuff. But then I kind of realized that, you know, there's a few scenes that really hammer this home, but I didn't really take this to the extreme that I should have, that a lot of Gendo's characterization is in fact caught up in Shinji's characterization, because they're to a greater extent than either of them would ever want to admit, they're almost the same person.
Yeah. Gendo avoids conflict in the exact same way Shinji does. He just also is the pawn of a weird secret society called Zele that is trying to bring about the end of the world.
He's the highest ranked guy, so he just puts a giant office that people are intimidated to walk into. So, yeah. He just isolates himself that way.
He certainly walks the walk of evil mastermind very well. Even though, like, it's pretty clear that he is kind of also just a scared coward underneath it all, just trying to find some way to get his wife back.
Gendo is the sort of emotionally broken person who was completely codependent on the one person he thought he had affection for.
Yeah.
And losing her, he completely broke down, decided to dive all into this ridiculous self-closed persona. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you just feel like, yeah, like, I want my glasses to shine at the right angle. I better move the lights in my room. I swear everything he does is incredibly deliberate.
Yeah.
Gendo, I don't think, is the origin of either of these things, but he definitely became the icon for the crossed fingers and shining glasses thing.
Mm-hmm.
For anime villains and stuff like that.
They call it the Gendo pose. So many people do.
Like, it's funny to me, like, now I'm like, man, Gendo's kind of also a victim in all this, too. He's not doing the right thing, I'll tell you that much. The breaking humanity down and so that people can get close to each other by not having any barriers. Like, I don't think this is the way to do that, Gendo, but
I think you are right that his relationship with Yui was so codependent that anything that would allow him to revive Yui in any way, either figurative or literal, he has gone for. Like, he's already done it several times.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, to him, Shinji just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because Shinji just had, Shinji is part of the relationship you have with Yui. It doesn't matter because it wasn't something that benefited him.
Shinji is, in many cases, I think part of the reason why Gendo avoids Shinji is that he reminds him of Yui, but is not Yui himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it just makes him think of what he's lost.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not going to say that this is a bad thing or anything like that, but I thought it was interesting that Gendo took Yui's name and took his own, because that's not common in either Japan or in America or in the West or in general. Just for the man to take the woman's name. It's usually the other way around, or the woman does some kind of hyphenated thing. But, you know, I think there's something there in just how much Gendo saw his identity as tied up in Yui herself.
That's really good.
Because we do get that scene in the past where Gendo was using his original name, which was, I believe, Rokubungi.
Rokubungi, by the way.
Rokubungi, yes. Yeah. So one thing that I'd like to, we didn't look this up, but maybe we should. I know Sele is as the organization that Gendo is involved with. The name is a reference to, I believe, you know, fey folklore traditions, but I don't know much about it other than that. Is there...
Seele is the German word for mind or spirit.
That would be Seele, S-E-E-L-I. It would be like the Seele and Unseele.
Yeah. Yeah. Seele is mind German or spirit.
Or soul.
Compared to Vile, which is will power, which I believe is what the organization that Misato makes in Rebuild 3.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yep. Well. Anyway, the point is, like, Seele means spirit. It is a big secret organization. We will talk about them a bit, but let's talk about the tertiary characters first. Like, so there's also a bunch of other side characters that we get to, like, briefly explore here and there throughout the series that don't quite take center stage like the other characters do. Like, first of all, there's Ritsuko, the scientist that is sort of like the brains of the entire outfit at NERF.
Misato's old friend. I can't remember if it's childhood or college.
College.
Also knew Ryujikaji with him. And is kind of about twice as messed up as Misato, despite trying to look more put together.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, she has so many complexes, just like barely held together.
And the funny thing is that a lot of her complexes come from her mother, who was also just as fucked up in a lot of the same ways.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to say this flat out. Gendo slept with both of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Gendo is such a weirdo.
Yeah. And remember, he's obsessed with one person, but he does stuff like this almost without questioning. It's just really just this part. Everyone gets sucked into his insanity.
Yeah,
it almost feels like, I'm not sure if Gendo felt anything for either one of these.
Oh, two. Absolutely. He felt nothing.
None.
Nothing. Yeah. Absolutely nothing.
End of Eva has a really brutal moment where he says something which almost certainly is like, oh, I love it. He's like, she says liar. And then he shoots her.
Yep.
Oh,
it's really just that simple.
Speaking of other people in Gendo's orbit, let's talk about Fuyutsuki. Fuyutsuki was fascinating to me on this watch through because, like, I didn't fully...
I'm the guy who stands behind Gendo's shoulder. It just kind of helps give us a sense of maturity.
But it turns out that Fuyutsuki was actually trying to take Gendo down.
Yeah.
And at the very last moment, Gendo made him an offer that he couldn't refuse.
Yep. He was a professor at the university that Yui went to, and, like, Yui was sort of his star student, as I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sees Gendo becoming obsessed with Yui and also his own weird things and, like, just ends up falling into Gendo's orbit because of all that.
I mean, he was unfortunately attracted to Yui, but that's just kind of, he was mature enough not to do anything about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing about Fuyutsuki is that he kind of saw Gendo's, the start of his descent into whatever this cult was that ended up causing and then covering up the cause of the second impact.
Wasn't Gendo already in Seele at the start of his time at that school? Like, that was the impression I got, is like Gendo was already tied up in all this Seele stuff at the
start. So like, when my impression is that he wasn't in it then, but then later after the second impact, when he meets Fuyutsuki again, when they're doing research on what happened to Antarctica, that is when he was
fully
caught up in Seele.
There's a lot of like subtext around it in the series that it's like not spoken, but just sort of implied. So it could be either way. Mm-hmm. I just know that like he's extremely worried by what Gendo is up to, but then ends up like falling into it anyway.
It's like he values Yui enough that he's willing to go along with it. And I think he sort of thinks he can keep things managed, but it's very much just like he's ended up just pulled into Gendo's orbit and can't really do much else.
Yeah.
Yep.
Someone trying to break people out of Gendo's orbit. Let's talk about Kaji.
Yeah. So, this is a guy who I'm not entirely sure should be around children.
Definitely shouldn't be around children. No. Especially not Asuka. But
Asuka has like a very bad case of puppy love for him.
Yes.
And he doesn't do anything to disabuse her of it. And in fact, to his minor credit, I don't think he ever like goes any further than this, but he does let her crawl all over him, literally.
Yeah.
He also kind of jokingly hits on Shinji to mess with his head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right after Shinji just had a weird moment with, I believe, with other characters as well. Like, I feel like his existence near Shinji is deeply dangerous for Shinji's insanity.
So he's also a double agent, triple agent? How many sides is he working?
I don't know. I feel like there's definitely organizations we never even heard about.
Yeah.
Yes. The big one that we know is that he's been with NERV for a while, but he's also a double agent for the UN.
Mm-hmm. he's trying to stop whatever Zele is trying to do is the big thing that I did that I'm sure we
can remember. So he worked for Zele. He kidnapped poor Fuyutsuki, then let him out again. It happens at one point.
Oh, yeah. That was like wild. Like, yeah.
And one thing to mention is that Zele and Nerve are not the same organization, even though Nerve theoretically is a front for Zele.
Nerve is sort of a follow up to what was the name of the organization beforehand.
It was something like Artificial Evolution Project or...
No. What was it called?
Well, I know Genda worked at the Artificial Evolution Laboratory. And that was during around when Second Impact's about to happen. Then there's Gayhern.
Gayhern, that's what it was.
Yeah. Gayhern.
Yeah.
It means brain. So he went from brain to nerve. Charming. Clever, yep. Guys.
Anyway,
go ahead. It all run by soul.
Yep. So Kaji was clearly working for all of these sides. He's working against Gendo, even though he was part of his organization, and trying to more or less keep tabs on whatever these supernatural artifacts that they have access to are. And this kind of actually brings to mind one of the central, I guess, themes of the show, is that we can't let the angels get to Terminal Dogma, which is in the center of the giant fortress that they have built under Neo Tokyo 3, or else the world is going to end. They never explain why, and they never really, but the angels are clearly drawn to it. They know something is there, and they're trying to make contact with it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Shinji's friends.
Yeah. His friend, who the first time he met him, kicked his ass.
Toji, and also Kensuke. We can talk about them together, though Toji is a bit more important overall.
You got the angry guy with jockeyish habits, very upset about an incident involving his sister.
Justifiably so.
But immediately takes it out violently on the first guy connected to it.
Then he, but he also sort of like ends up realizing, oh, hey, Shinji's going through shit. I should probably just like be there for him. Like
then Ken's, yeah.
Toji is like, honestly, just ends up becoming a bro for Shinji, and he's really cool.
And Kensuke's just a complete nerd with his camera. The two of them decide to cosplay as the comedy duo for about half a dozen episodes.
So here's the thing about Kensuke that I was taken aback by on this watch through. That guy's a military otaku. Yeah. Like, he is way obsessed with military hardware. When Shinji runs away for an episode, he like runs into Kensuke doing some like survival training out in the mountains. This guy's a prepper.
Well, also, he's kind of like playing, you know, like military fantasies by himself, too.
He's the guy that wants to be in the robot.
Looking up Kensuke, I just love this random manga image of Shinji see Kensuke looming over him in military fatigues with a rifle.
Oh, gosh. This guy, I'm honestly worried that he might actually like end up being a fascist. Yeah. Sorry.
So the two of them kind of fall into Shinji's orbit as the friends, partly because they like him, unfortunately, partly because he does give them access, which Shinji suspects as well.
Yeah.
And that's part of his own self-worth images. And then suddenly they get pulled into the plot.
They couldn't really feel it because even though they were in the cockpit, but like they could see what Shinji was going through and they could see how piloting this thing clearly psychologically affected the hell out of him.
I feel like Toji recognizes it, and that's kind of like why he has so much apprehension that when they reveal that he's the fourth child. But
a giant flatworm with Bernie electric whips. That just makes perfect sense there. I'm not calling the fourth angel anything else.
Yep. Definitely nothing else. But Kensuke sees all this and he's like, yeah, sign me the fuck up. I want to pilot this thing. No one should allow Kensuke to pilot a robot.
I keep thinking of the one fan fiction where someone's like, well, the only thing you do is you let him pilot Jet alone because no one else wants that.
Right.
Don't ask. Just
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bad fan fiction.
Okay.
So much of this stuck in my head.
Let's talk about the class rep real quick. Hikari. Hikari's development ends up being a bit tied into Toji.
And then Asuka.
She ends up being Asuka's best friend. She sort of falls out of the plot once Toji tragically gets injured due to both an angel possessing the Eva that he was supposed to be piloting, combined with the dummy system possessing Shinji's Eva.
So, and both of those kind of fall to Gendo's a huge asshole.
Yeah.
Because they had huge reasons to suspect something was wrong with 3, you feel? And then he deliberately sets the Eva switch to evil, which really is overkill.
Hikari is an interesting character, but she doesn't get to do much in the original series. She gets a lot more, I believe, in the manga and in Rebuild, but not much here.
And then we get to Kaoru, who is
one episode wonder.
And also the most interesting angel.
You take the voice of Zelos from Slayers. Which one was he first?
I'm pretty sure Akira Ishida was Zelos first, yes.
And so you take that, the guy who has just the most amazing, untrustworthy voice in existence.
Mm-hmm.
You put him into a character who is the weirdest double agent possible.
Yeah.
Frustrating to the guy who could tell us the whole plot, but doesn't want to talk much about it.
Like, he clearly, like, knows what's going on. He knows what the angels are because he's one of them. He knows what Gendo's plan is.
But he reveals things we never heard. Like, wait, that giant thing isn't Adam. It's Lilith. And explains none of that shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh. None of it. He, like, he shows up. He alludes to a lot of the storyline. And then Gendo tells Shinji to kill him.
But, yeah, actually, Kaoru asks to be killed.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And for very vague reasons. Like, he says something about not liking Asuka, but then says he's doing it to protect Shinji. But let's be clear. This is what finally breaks that tiny frayed thread of calm left in Shinji's head.
Oh, yeah. Like, he spends a whole episode, like, becoming friends with Shinji and then forces him to kill him.
Yep. Friends. It's really interesting because it gets... Dude. There's definitely a very strong homoerotic subtext.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he says to Shinji is just simply, I love you.
Yep. And like, and Shinji's like, that's the first time anyone has said that to me.
And I say he actually penetrates through Shinji's Gendo focus needs. And he's actually like getting in deep enough in Shinji's affection into his will that it's actually becoming important to him. And then this shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He can't believe that Kaoru would betray them in this way at first. And he doesn't even want to go after him.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's kind of forced to, and he goes down into there, and Kaoru actually gets to Terminal Dogma, which would theoretically have caused the end of the world.
And it doesn't.
Well, that's because he doesn't, I don't know, touch or connect or link up to the giant impaled crucified monster there, which mm-hmm. is either the first or second angel. God,
it's the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think also... something that kind of like gets touched on in Rebuild, but like the third impact can be caused by a lot more than just angels coming in contact with Adam.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, let's talk about the Evas and the angels. I think we can just sort of talk about them both together. So first of all, it needs to be clear. The Eva units are not robots. Thank you, Janet.
They're giant, mostly proportionate human shaped beings wrapped in metallic armor and chains. Basically,
that's not armor. That's binding.
Yep.
It's not armor, it's bindings. Now it's truly free.
They are artificial humans. Jinzo and Ningen is the term that they use in Japanese.
I believe their size varies wildly depending on who you ask or where you're watching.
They are controlled by putting the pilot into a pill-shaped thing that gets stuck into the back of its neck, sort of like connecting to the spinal column.
I just keep thinking of things people would say about symbolism, like the plug suits have little markers on the head. That's where samurai armor would normally have horns. It's like, It's just the rabbit hole of Eva symbology is truly frightening. Like it's the iceberg to end all icebergs.
But the main Eva units that we get acquainted with in the series are 00, which is Rei's unit, 01, which is Shinji's unit, and 02, which is Asuka's.
Yeah. 04 is certainly not appearing in this reality as it somehow vaporizes before we see it. And 03 ends up being a giant trap.
Yep.
There's also mention of 06 and 08 being built in other places.
That will be paying off an end of Eva.
Yep.
Yep.
We don't need to say much more about them other than Eva Unit 1. It seems to be deeply implied to be Shinji's mom in the original series.
There might be something in Unit 0, but they're really vague about it.
Yeah.
There's also, they're said to be copies of the original angel, Adam.
Yeah. There's a lot
of indicate Eva 1 might be what's left of Adam, but it's a little one of those one things that you gotta get into. I don't even know if it's real, if it was in there, it was like fan works I read and absorbed someday. I just don't even know anymore.
But we do know that during the activation tests for Eva Unit 01, that basically they powered it up and Yui was in the room, and suddenly Yui was not in the room, and that's how they lost Yui.
I thought she was actually in the driver's seat.
Hmm.
She might have been.
It's
not sure.
It's really hard because Eva has an amazing amount of side material and written after and added on material. So it's really tricky to be certain exactly what's happened.
Yeah, they basically said that she was present when the test was happening in the anime, and that she was gone afterwards.
Whatever happened, if whether her or not, it's known that it has absorbed someone before because it happens later to Shinji.
Yeah, Shinji spends an episode just like in the general essence of an Eva as a second near-death experience that psychoanalyzes him.
I mean, that's just being kind that his very first piloting experience isn't a near-death experience too. But
yeah, but that doesn't send him to the train. The symbolic train of the near-death experience. Anyway, let's talk about the angels too.
By the way, 02 also has a soul in it, if you ask End of Eva. That's besides.
Yeah,
I mean, they're supposed to all have a soul because the way that they're made is that so they're not true angels because they have a human soul. And
that pisses off Zele for some reason.
Yep. There's also about 2 to 3 layers of secret governments as well. So yep. Everything is just like.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit.
Can angels? We?
We can. We can talk about
angels
something.
Are interesting because they're actually. They're really interesting monsters of the week. They're well designed enough to be really alien and unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
They do a fantastic job of being rather nightmarish eldritch monsters that yeah. none of which are truly the same, though some have similarities.
Like the very first one is just like sort of almost humanoid, but like yeah. very not.
With weird, huge hunched shoulders. A face mask set into like no neck.
And I guess I should say it's the third angel, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we're gonna start with number three here.
Yeah. Like,
Sariel, the one that gets blown up by a non-nuclear and then has like a half regenerated form underneath its shedding skin for the rest of its appearance.
Yeah, yeah. The fourth angel, I don't know any of the names.
Shamisel.
Shamisel, as you said, I don't want to describe what I. I think it looks like
it's a flatworm with spider legs and whips.
Yep.
Come on. That's all we need, dude.
Yep. Sure.
Actually, it's Shamsul. I think I pronounced it wrong.
OK.
It's the one of the ones where Shinji has probably the cleanest fight.
Yeah.
It's only difficult to let 2 idiots in the cockpit, which corrupts the data. But
yep. Let's see. Then the next one is that
Ramiel.
That's the screams geometrically one, right?
It's a D8 of Doom.
Yeah. Screams geometrically.
Yeah. I call that episode. Tokyo 3's battle with geometry.
Yeah. It's great because it really feels like it's the first min-maxed angel.
Yeah.
They gave it an incredibly long-ranged attack and an incredibly slow, steady drill to break through the shields while nothing can approach it.
Yeah.
Basically, it automatically reacts to any threat in its vicinity by sending out a very high-powered power particle beam.
But its vicinity is measured in kilometers.
They have to defeat it by sniping it, which is pretty damn cool when they also use it. Like, they take all the power from Japan to power the sniper rifle to do it.
I believe that they put up like a shuttle's heat shield as a defensive weapon. It still barely works.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amusing thing about these episodes, these Monster of the Week episodes, is that just even without the context of the character drama going on, they're actually genuinely interesting Monster of the Week stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like the process to actually solve the problems is cool. And there's drama in it. You know, when against that angel there, they initially send up Eva Unit 01 to attempt to engage it. And basically as soon as it's up the elevator, just wham, he's hit with a particle beam.
Yeah. Even before it's powering up as soon as it senses him coming, before it even is released from its clamps on its huge elevator, it's cooking him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's how they figure out that they have to snipe it. And even then, before the shot gets off, it's already firing its particle beam.
Yeah. Yep. And they actually do this cool, like, it looks like gravimetric lensing between the two shots, throwing them both off.
And that's one of the episodes that made me realize this watch through how similar Gendo and
Shinji
are, because after Rei gets injured protecting him, Shinji does actually get emotional and fries his hands, getting her out of the pod.
First time we see Rei smile too. Yeah.
Yeah. After that, we have Gagiel. I could tell you what each of these angels' names mean, but I feel like that's being a little bit over effort.
Yeah, that's a bit over effort. Let's just this is the part where like they all kind of blend together. Which one was this one again?
This is the giant fish, the one that somehow knew that Eva 02 was being transported and just starts jumping on the fleet.
Somehow, I have theories.
And because the Evas need amphibious equipment, they can't really move underwater. So it just like takes the two of them, literally just taking a burst second that they can shoot missiles into its mouth.
Actually, they use a suicide attack from two battleships.
Then they have Israfel, the twin.
Oh, yeah, the one that they have to dance fight to beat.
I love that they're fighting these angels, and for some reason, the angels comically plant them in the ground with their legs sticking up.
Yes, yep. Yes.
Very Hildebrand energy.
We may be horrifying monsters from beyond human ken, but we like a good laugh.
And I love that, like, just everyone on the bridge is just, like, so embarrassing. Like, it's just flat out treated as a joke.
They hit him with more bombs. This one actually manages to, put them into a regeneration cycle, like we're watching Shin Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's delivery because that's Anno later.
Oh, yeah. Shin Godzilla is kind of a remake of Evangelion.
With Godzilla. Fantastic movie. I recommend it.
Highly recommend it. It's great.
So because it's two of them, and although we see them moving independently, clearly they're linked up. That means two pilots must learn to do Dance Dance Revolution so they can sync together.
Yes. Like,
this is definitely the wacky era.
Like, it is a fun episode because we get to see Shinji and Asuka cohabitating and arguing. And, like, there's just a lot of good character drama in it. It's a lot of fun.
And you have to love it. Makes you think that, like, we've solved their problems. They'll be together now. And then we just see the relationship crash and burn even worsely.
Yeah. Let's see. What is the next one? Is the next one the weird spider?
Volcano, Sandalphin.
Oh, right. The one that is just, like, growing in the volcano.
Yeah, they try to capture it alive.
They put Asuka in a comedy fat suit.
And put the Eva in a comedy fat suit, too, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it completely fails, and they just blow it up.
Yep. Is the next one the spider?
Yep, Matario, the spider, conveniently shows up during a power outage.
Yes, that episode's really cool because, like, the problem is not the angel. The problem is people trying to solve this power outage while also dealing in a city that's, like, completely tech-derived. It's a really cool episode. I love it.
It goes down so easily once they get the Evas going. It just takes one volley of shots into its eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, but that's also because they have all three Evas working. One of them is neutralizing the AT field and so forth. Like, this is what you're supposed to be able to do. Get in close, break their magic defense with your own magic defense. This will beat them almost conventionally. So,
yeah, it's a really cool episode.
Next is Big Fat Guy of Sakio.
Which one was that again?
The one in orbits. I was making a joke. Right. His whole plan is to belly flop and everything.
Yes.
Going with the old bonus stage joke.
Oh, I'm a big fat guy. No. It makes a.
This one's bombing, the biggest.
It makes a bombing approach from space.
It's dropping bits of its body, which apparently can just explode their AT field. So it's tracking shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then it's just going to drop on them.
Yep. And so, like, all the Evas have to go in and catch it. It is just a fun bit of.
This is probably the top of the exciting action angels.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, things get weird.
Yeah. Next, we get into the weird ones. Iruel, the angel. I just want to mention that Iruel is the angel of fear because this is the virus.
Yeah.
The angels have clearly been getting smarter. They've been doing more and more complicated things as times go on.
Apart from the spider, he was just taking advantage of a power outage.
Well, yeah, they might have been like, powers out, go. he's the attack of opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this one, this virus is like, I'm going to attack their computer.
Yeah. Their computer is named after the tradition of the three wise men from the Bible, because of course
it doesn't even start attacking the computer. It actually starts infecting
the Avis,
biological parts of the base.
Yeah.
And then it realizes its best option is to affect the computers so they can have a vote to self-destruct.
Yeah. Like it is. And so, like, this is one of those angels that is just like, actually not really fought by the Evas.
Yeah, in fact, they spend the whole time naked outside on the grass, as I recall.
Because they can't do shit to this. It is Ritsuko's episode.
Don't they launch the Evas out to get them away from it or something like that?
They do, actually, yes, to prevent it from infecting them.
Yep.
By the way, I'm going to start naming what the angels are from this point on, like what their symbolism is. Just
sure, go for it.
Scott's because they're all named after biblical angels.
Yes. Well,
not biblical.
There's no angels in the Bible by name.
Well, yes, sorry, I mean... I mean, angels from various mystic traditions.
Esoteric mysticism.
Generally, Kabbalah is close to it.
Yeah. Esoteric mysticism, yes.
And next, we decide to go in the mind bend, and we have Laeliel, the angel of night.
Is that the happy fun ball?
Yes, but remember, the ball is just its shadow.
Yes.
Yes.
Its body is the shadow on the ground. The huge, weird zebra ball in the sky is its shadow, because it's some sort of one, two-dimensional being.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of interested in this one because the ball that appears at first, it looks like it has dazzle camouflage.
Yes.
And it looks like it should have a big eye in the bottom because it has like big spots, so it could be eyes.
And it absorbs Ava units and sends people to these near-death train realm.
Yeah, in the Dirac Sea, whatever the fuck that is, but that's what they call it.
Yep.
I believe that is a quantum physics reference.
A real scientific term. A theoretical model of the vacuum as an infinite sea of particles possessing negative energy, theorized by by British physicist Paul Dirac in 1930.
Neat.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So basically, this is one of the ones that really decides to see if Shinji will break. Because the Ava's immobile inside this weird space. It's going to run out of battery power and then life support eventually. Mm-hmm. And he's being assaulted by, I'm not clear if it's the angel or his own mental issues.
Yes. It's both.
So I believe that the angel is responsible for the imprisonment.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
But I think that all the things that happened to Shinji inside the Ava while imprisoned is actually due to the true identity of Ava Unit 01 and his own issues interacting with it.
Like him going into berserk mode and the Ava ripping out of the ball that's a shadow, but also the ball is therefore coming out through that is an iconic image.
Yeah.
It's... Like, do we even control Ava, I think, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually laughing at that one because I thought it was very clearly a rebirth metaphor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shinji dies and is reborn.
Yep.
Yeah, and he rips his way out, so he already has Oedipal problems. So
with the power of his mother, too.
Oh, no.
Now I think the angels stop messing around, I would argue. Because next is RDL, which is the angel of haze or fog. And it is another parasite, but this one directly infects the new Ava 03.
Yep, which is the one that Toji is meant to pilot.
It literally got picked up out of a thundercloud.
So, like, the thing that, like, struck me so much about this particular fight is just, like, once Toji is in the mech, we never see or hear him again until he's, like, out in the hospital. Like, we know what's happened. The characters don't quite know yet. And, like, once we know fully what's going on, it's just as, like, oh, shit.
It gives the Ava Luffy powers.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, it has stretchy arms.
Yes, it does.
This one breaks Shinji because, as we mentioned, Gendo sets the Ava into crazy mode. It rips it apart and actually crushes the entry plug in its hand for no reason.
Yeah. Toji survives miraculously in the anime.
Well, he survives because I don't know, was told by his producer, you can make this show, but you don't get to kill any kids. And also apparently said you have to work for me for 5 more years or something like that. I read in an interview.
Wow.
So I think that's why in the manga Toji dies.
Okay, yeah. The manga is more true to Anno's vision, I'm guessing.
I do believe he just indicated, I don't know if he like needed him to die, but he did said he was definitely blocked from doing so.
Wow. The rebuild puts a totally different person in the cockpit.
Yeah, it makes sense. So and then I think at this point the angels run out of patience.
Yes.
As they send Zeruel, angel of strength, arm of God.
Like, this thing just, like, does what all the other angels, like, spent a long time doing in a fucking instant.
It's similar to the third angel in its color scheme, but it's got more white on it. It's got a weirder, more scream-like face, and doesn't have arms. It has these two flattened nubs that unfold into razor-sharp paper.
Yeah.
Like, it took Ramiel hours to break through the Geofront's thing. This thing fires one blast and goes to 2/3 of it.
This thing isn't fucking around.
It takes on 02, rips its arms off. Unit 0 tries to do a self-destruct. It drops armor over its core, so nothing happens. Mm-hmm.
In the previous episode where Shinji tried to run away, he couldn't. Honestly, he couldn't even get out of the orbit of Neo Tokyo 3. Mm-hmm. He just kind of ends up in kind of the outskirts of it and meets up with Kensuke, and then Nerve Intelligence comes to pick him up. But this time, Shinji gets tired of Gendo's shit and is completely resolved to leave. And the only reason he doesn't is because the train stops.
Yep.
Dude, he tried to kill Gendo with the Ava. He's trying to smash you a Geofront saying, I have enough battery power to go through half as to get to you. So they literally just... They like, because they're in fluid, they increase the pressure of fluid until he passes out. So
Yeah. It takes Kaji telling Shinji, hey, what do you think you should be doing right now? Yeah. And explain to Shinji what the stakes actually are to get Shinji to get in the robot and fight. Yeah.
Basically, Shinji tries to go away and all the paperwork, everything is done to get him to go away. And when he's about to get on the train, an angel attacks and all the trains stop.
Yep.
And he ends up evacuating, and he by chance meets up with Kaji, who convinces him to get in the robot.
Yep. Right. Which it also just feels like, oh, the system continues to contrive ways to keep Shinji inside it. But
but this fight is wild. Like, he's fighting it back pretty well. He's actually like pulling at it, like it broke through his shield, then his power runs out.
Yep.
And then everyone's luck runs out.
And then he goes berserk, right?
Oh, no, he doesn't go berserk. This one's not him.
Ah, yes, the Eva goes berserk.
Yeah, like they've always been describing the synchronization level, how it needs to be at least like a certain level to move, but the higher it is, it implies should be danger.
He goes to 400%.
Like three times what we've ever heard it before. The Eva screams, hunches into the, like it actually starts acting
an animal.
Well, primates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it acts like an enraged gorilla or a chimpanzee.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also see horrifyingly teeth behind its faceplate now.
Yeah, and then it consumes the angel. It eats it.
Like it stops that razor sharp paper with its hand, tears off a chunk, puts it to it had lost an arm, regenerates a new arm with no armor. It looks really human. You can see eyes and not just like colors behind its mask now. And he said it tears the powers and eats it, and apparently consumes its power source by doing so.
Yeah, they've been mentioning the idea of an S2 engine, but there was also a thing where Sele said that they didn't ever want an Eva to actually have an S2 engine in it.
And it would become an absolute being.
Yeah. We don't want that.
And we don't want gods. God.
Please, no gods.
And so when that happens, they say the Eva managed to get an S2 engine by consuming the angel. So apparently the S2 engine is actually a euphemism for whatever the core of an angel is.
I think they literally say the angels have some sort of power source. It doesn't eat the core because the core is very visible on its on like mm-hmm. the front there. Yeah, yeah. It rips apart and eats what looks like its entrails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I mean is that whatever its power source is, that the S2 engine is a euphemism for that.
Well, it seems like it's more, I feel like it was more like it spontaneously created one, is what the impression I got.
No, they definitely say it consumed the angels without.
Okay. Okay.
And it says like, and it's a, it,
I mean, they say a lot of
Oregon,
things.
they did use a word for that. I guess the word to use Kikan, if you write it with different kanji, it could mean organ. So maybe it's a bit of, maybe it's a bit of like wordplay.
Hmm.
I am rapidly running through Ava's wiki as
we need to go. Yeah, let's keep moving.
There's three more angels to talk about. We've already talked about the last one, Tabrisu is Kaoru. The last two are Satis.
Sorry.
Ariel is the giant light bird I mentioned. The angel of birds, the light of God is what its name means. It stays up in space.
Yep, it's stuck up in space and it just shines a light on Asuka.
Yeah.
And whatever that light is, it's an intense psychological attack that causes her to entirely break down.
Yeah.
Like it shatters her mind, basically. And they can't reach it because it's not coming down. So they get the other biggest symbolism they have.
The Spear of Longinus.
Yep. And they just throw it at it. It shoots through the angel and it gets stuck on the moon.
Yep.
And
oh, we're not getting that back.
Nope.
It's clear that Gendo actually did this as an excuse, more or less. It's like, hey, we couldn't take care of the angel any other way. We had to use it. Sele can't complain. But apparently Sele wanted that.
Yeah. It was stabbed into the being in Terminal Dogma. And it's implied it starts to regenerate once the spear is removed.
The spear was somehow binding it in some way. The symbolism here is that the Spear of Longinus is the spear that was supposedly used to stab Jesus in the stomach when he was crucified. Longinus was the name of the soldier who did that.
And just to add to the symbolism of how, as the religious elements, for some reason, Ariel's other attack is blasting Handel's Messiah at all times.
Yep. Very strange.
Yeah. And finally, the last angel to talk about, since we already mentioned Tabris, which was Koru, there was Armisal. Armisal is the angel of the womb, and it looks like a floating DNA strand.
Yeah, okay.
Made of light. And it just basically what it does is it tries to possess Rey and ends up what kills her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she blows herself up to stop because it seemed to be trying to consume her.
Boy, my memory is like ends up being all muddy around that point.
Yeah.
Well, it's because at this point the angel attacks are basically just ways to push things worse. Like there's not really much to the There's not really much in terms of the attack itself. Like, there's no strategy to Armisel or Ariel.
Right.
Each of those are just solved by a single action that we didn't know about.
Right. I don't want to talk about the last two episodes just yet. Let's talk about the weird religious symbolism in this series.
There's lots of it.
Yeah, and Hideaki Anno, when asked, basically claimed that, yeah, I just put it in there because I thought it looks cool. And I want to call bullshit on that, but not for the reasons you're expecting. Like, as I was watching the series, I found myself thinking of a very diegetic reading of the naming of all these things. Like, if absent a weird cult superimposing their own beliefs on this, they just seem to be completely devoid of actual religious subtext and more just come off as a strange artificial invasion, like either aliens or something Sele is creating. With a cult giving it names, it gives it that sense of, oh, this is some strange big thing because this is what we believe and this is the ideas that we're putting in the world because we are a weird cult that wants to bring about the end of the world.
Well, it's interesting because of the fact that there are some religious symbolism things in the angels' attacks and appearance themselves. Like Adam specifically, in the few shots of the second impact we saw, it looked like a giant of light hovering over the pole of the world with giant angel wings coming out of its back.
Were they angel wings, though?
Well, they were wings of light. So,
yeah.
And then you have the various explosion attacks that literally become crosses as they instead of mushroom clouds.
I always thought those wings of light looked more like giant spider legs pulling
out
a haze of explosion. But
yeah, and like, the only thing that I can, like, you can kind of say, yeah, those kind of might have some kind of religious implications is the weird cross explosions, but also.
Also, they decide to crucify Lilith. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's their. But again, that's Zayla's choice, though, right?
I don't know.
Well,
Ava is cheerfully devoid of final answers. Definitely, whether or not the symbolism had meaning or was meant to be cool, it's clear a lot of it was like, we want to see what you take away from it. Like, I would bet. Yeah.
That, I mean, but I will say, like, a lot of what I get from Sele is, like, it feels like an analog for the Japanese new religions. Like, Japan has a pretty big problem with cults that get called new religions. And, like, it's known, at the very least, that, so while the series was in planning, the Aum Shinrikyo terror attack, the sarin nerve gas in the Tokyo subway, happened while this was under production. And
if you want to talk about recent scars on the Japanese, like, popular cult consciousness, it's that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, it seems pretty clear to me that a lot of stuff about Sele was influenced by that idea.
Yeah. It might not be that they were using the symbols for their original, like, religious meaning, but people in the settings named these things after these concepts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, that's the general thing is that what I get is, like, it's not necessarily that, like, it has actual meaning, but the characters in the setting think it has meaning, and that's everything.
The one thing I will say is that Kaoru's dialogue does seem to show that the angels themselves are aware of these religious concepts.
Sort of, kind of. It's not quite clear, because Kaoru is very cagey about a lot of shit, but
yeah. But he uses loaded religious terms to refer to humanity, like Lilim and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of like basically saying that humanity is children of Lilith.
Yep.
I've read side materials of a lot of that. Please don't ask me to decode them or put them together. It's not wild. Good. I don't know how much it was at the time. Like, it's a story of ancient terraforming alien gods and two gods landing the same planet. I don't know where it comes from, but it's just this is deep, heavy elements there.
That sounds like we're going full Xenogears here.
I mean, we almost go full Hitchhiker's Guide to the Wrong Species is Running Earth, apparently.
True.
That is part of what my reading says. It's like, this is like Lilith usurped Adam and the angels with the Lilim, which are humanity. But I don't know.
I guess we should also talk about Sigmund Freud, maybe.
Must be. The guy's kind of creepy.
I mean, the thing is, like, Anno was influenced by a lot of psychoanalytic writing in the writing of this story is the big thing.
You can kind of see that in a lot of the psychoanalysis episodes, especially the last two.
Yeah, yeah. The characters are sort of like a split between the id, ego, and superego. There's a lot of, like, it's not necessarily like actual science, quote unquote, but it still is influential and interesting ways to write about. And like, you can see it all over the place in this story as well. I think that's all I really want to say about Sigmund Freud, though.
And well, that, and we have, like I said, Gendo is just the Oedipal mind examples.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, we're getting close to the end of this discussion, but I want to talk about Impact first.
Okay, so in the year 1999.
No, I'm not talking about the second Impact, nor am I talking about
the third Impact. You're right.
Like, I'm not talking about the cataclysmic events, that world-ending events that are called impacts in the story. I'm talking about the impact on culture. As far as, like, a structure of a story, Evangelion is not that unique. It is a character drama with giant robot mecha fights as conflict. It's a classic sitcom.
But in terms of visual, of style, of deconstruction, it became probably just a lodestone right in the middle of anime and just pop culture in general, which has been influencing things right up to present
day. In terms of just like its immediate orbit in anime and manga, it's as important in the steering the direction of anime as Gundam was two decades prior. And I don't know if there's been an anime since Eva that has had this level of influence.
I'm just going to pull an example at random. You tell me the fact that in Attack on Titan, the humans are inside the nape of the neck is not a deliberate reference to where the entry plugs are. I call you a liar.
Attack on Titan is totally influenced by Evangelion, and I don't think it has the cultural impact that Evangelion did. How about Monica Magica? There's a story that's like pushing for the same kind of deconstruction, but of the magical girl genre.
And it hits the same touchstones. It has like a force beyond humanity, which is actually inherently dangerous to it. Mm-hmm. Because it's being written by someone who has an even darker love for Lovecraftian elements, the unknowable beings are even more malicious and active.
But in that case, it's still kind of like responding to Eva in its own way, not like actually trying to be a thing setting out in forward on its own thing and like shaping anime in a new direction. Like even like direct responses like Gurren Lagann.
FLCL.
FLCL, Gurren Lagann are all still can only exist in the context of it. And that's kind of Gainax talking to itself, if you will.
Gaigar exists because someone was getting mad with how much they were doing all the dark stuff and wanted to return to form.
Mm-hmm. Just character archetypes. Like, how many protagonists are just ordinary Japanese high school boys in white shirts with black hair? They're basically Shinji in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And like, we'll be able to talk about some of them, but like, the one thing that I think is really interesting between Shinji versus Keiichi is that Keiichi feels like an anti-Shinji in many ways. He is very outgoing and personable. We get to see his interiority a lot in the visual novel.
But I would say that in many ways that Higurashi is actually going for the same sort of deconstruction as well.
How about the character archetype of Rei, the emotionless girl? Rei is a lot more complicated than that. There are so many Rei clones in anime. You can tell pretty clearly what they're trying to go for when you see one of them introduced.
They just pull them right out of the aquarium and put them in a new show.
God damn it. Yuki in Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya is the alien that is sent to monitor humanity. She's very blank. There's also, I think we'll talk a little bit about the horniness of the fans later, but like, there's something going on in why that character archetype is popular that I kind of like raise an eyebrow at.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Asuka's influence on it, where people didn't understand that she's not a tsundere.
No, she's actually a deeply unwell person who needs help and is denied it.
Yeah. For some reason, the angry girl who ends up liking the protagonist, you can pretty clearly tell where that archetype came from. People didn't quite understand what Asuka was actually going for.
Because frankly, like I said, she's horrifically sabotages the relationship she has with him more than once. Like, literally coming on to him, which is her right, but then insulting him and pretending she was just messing with him. Just making sure that he can't ever trust what ground he's on with her, because she keeps changing him.
Yep.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of it is more or less that...
Well, she's also, like, taking out her own jealousy on about Kaji on him, too.
Well, there's that, too, but there's also just a thing where she wants to be in control, and she feels that it's only natural for Shinji to desire her, and it's her choice then to decide whether she will play along with that or whether she will reject him, and she likes having that kind of power.
She actually would feel like someone, if it wasn't emotional problems, actual genuine need of help, I would call her someone who's afraid of cringe. But it's actually a more intense, more terrible version of that.
Yeah.
Like, sincerity clearly scares her.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Let's move on real quick because this is getting kind of long.
Very much so, yes.
Impact on video games, like, I feel like you could find a lot of influences, but the one I particularly want to look at is Squaresoft's output in the second half of the 90s. Like, although you could argue that Xenogears was kind of in production at the same time as Ava, you can't tell me that, like, there wasn't a little bit of the same thing. They're working out of the same core reference pool, and they use a lot of the same semiotics, like, right down to Faye's little alternate personality kid is called the Coward. Like, there's so much in there that's just, like...
And he just has these definitely these self-destructive interior fights.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go on to Final Fantasies 7, 8, and 9, where, like, all the protagonists are, like, different reflections of Shinji in some way, shape, or form. They all have their own identity crisis issues. They all have their own conflict avoidance methods. Cloud kind of plays it cool to try and get through the fact that he doesn't know shit and he's a big dork. Squall keeps everything inside him. He's just, like, this burning pile of rage, and he only, like, can survive by following orders. And then Zidane is sort of like the counter to that idea, where he avoids his issues by just, like, trying to come off as a suave ladies man. And he fails at that, too. So, yeah, like, all those protagonists, I'm just like, they're all Shinji's in various ways, shapes, or forms, either responses to Shinji or reflections of Shinji.
It's Shinji FR.
Oh, no. I want to just quickly talk on Kingdom Hearts real quick, because you cannot tell me that Organization 13 is not influenced by Sele.
What if they were all pretty boys and also a few weird characters as well, and yes, they all had elemental powers?
They're all trying to do human instrumentality just with Kingdom Hearts rather than Orange Tang.
But I think, yeah, but that's always just sort of what Xemnas wanted, is half-remembered goals.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to do something with Kingdom Hearts. I think it was mash it all together to make a new one. Yeah, that sounds good.
I want to fill in that empty hole in my heart. Wait.
I need to fill the hole now. Uh-oh.
So how about Western media? Like, this is something where I'm like, there's a lot of people that make visual references to Ava, especially in cartoons, but it's more just like trying to upplay the weirdness of it rather than like... Yeah. Engage with the actual media, I think.
There's certainly a strong cultural element to Ava and exactly how characters are responding and trying to resolve things. I feel like a lot of Western animation creators in the last 20 years, you get a lot of people who are anime fans or grew up on it, and that's why you keep getting the references appearing.
Yeah, but like, I would say that like, they don't necessarily try to answer the questions that Ava was saying, they more try to replicate the imagery of Ava. And it's still, like, very striking imagery. You can see it in, like, so many cartoons nowadays will make references. Like, you showed us that little regular show thing where they just...
Yeah, they had a special opening.
Yeah.
It was a special opening for their More and More Giant Robots episode.
Like, Steven Universe did the End of Ava reference.
With pizza.
With the pizza. Like,
it's everywhere.
Yeah, it shows up everywhere. But at the same time, I'm also like, it doesn't quite do the exact same thing that, like, where Japanese media is trying to answer Ava, Western media is more trying to, like, reflect Ava, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They do tend to use it as a very much a...
visual shorthand?
Yeah, visual shorthand for some emotion. Like, that Steven Universe one, it's trying to... it's representing sort of a world collapsing, like that dark view was.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fandom real quick and its impact on fandom in general. Because...
Oh, no.
Ooh, boy.
Oof. We're going to talk about the last two episodes in a bit, but I want to, like, as far as I understand, this is one of the earliest examples we have of a fandom just completely getting upset and angry at the creators.
To talk about briefly, there is some indication that Anno was getting frustrated even before the series was over. Like, they may have said, like, he dug in his heels on the darker elements because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like I said, the unquestionable part is End of Ava.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last episodes, you know, as surreal and philosophical as they were, it clearly, like, a large chunk of the fandom did not appreciate it. And they basically rioted and sent death threats.
Yeah.
We know this because Anno put the death threats in End of Ava.
Yeah. It is one of those things where just, like, the fandom developed a life of its own. A lot of them were, like, really angry about how it turned out. And, like, I'm going to talk a little bit more about my thoughts on that in a bit. But, yeah. Then there's also the horny fans.
I kind of joked through my college years. I was a really big fan of mock reading fan fictions, and also, like, there were people who were writing MST3K style treatments of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, I became acquainted with the fact that Ava went through some... I know every fandom has fanfics out the wazoo, but Ava really feels like the special one for that.
What are some of the weirdest fanfics that you found?
Okay. Fan fiction where a well-known fan fiction community who likes to make referential stuff made a replacement character who was the inexplicable son of Fox Mulder and Laura Croft. there was the sequel where a surfer dude named Tom took over and they killed the leader of Sele by high-fiving him between two mechas. There's a one where Ava 1 fucked Ava 2. Yeah, I don't know how I did this end up
compared to the Sonic the Hedgehog fan fiction community.
Oh, as someone who has carefully never read any of the, let's call it the kink element for the positive or the negative elements, I only know a few really weird Sonic fics that the same MST groups did. Ava's kind of like, it was really big on the replacement characters, like what characters that you'd be instead of Shinji or along with Shinji. Mm-hmm. There's a weird self-aware fanfic where Lena from Slayers goes into a magical coma from overusing Giga Slave and wakes up in Tokyo 3. Wow. And for some reason, it's really self-aware and stupid. Like the angels are up to 30 or 40 and it's everything by the week. The Avas are sponsored. Pinky and the Brain tried to get in on it. It was very stupid.
Wow.
But Zealous was posing as a waiter and he wouldn't tell anyone what the specials were because it's a secret.
Wow. Wow.
It was dumb.
That's very dumb. But like,
I'm sorry to anyone out there who was a creator of either the fanfics or the MSTs. I don't remember your names. I don't remember the fixed names. I just remember these shreds of decade old memories.
Wow. Oh no. Trauma. And like, so the last thing I kind of want to touch on is I can't really talk about much here without getting into spoilers on when they cry, but there's a specific psychology and morality used in Evangelion, along with the questions posed in the final episodes that I feel are like the core concepts that Ryukishi was using in building his own stories when we go into further into when they cry. And that's why I wanted to touch on Evangelion first. Well, I wanted to touch on Evangelion first, just because I knew what we wanted to talk about anime in general. And I'm like, we can't talk about anime without talking about Ava. But as I went through Ava again through this time, I was just like, holy shit, I found the Rosetta Stone for Ryukishi. So watch Ava, folks. It rips. Let's talk about the last two episodes real quick. Why did the anime fandom lie about these episodes? These are some of the best episodes of anime I've ever seen.
Because high concept philosophy, lack of action, almost entirely narrated with surreal imagery. That's a tricky sell.
Yeah, but like I always remember people saying like they ran out of money and all the art is line art. And now I'm watching, I'm like, this is intentional. They meant to do this. This is not an accident.
People took stuff like the long pauses for deliberate action in earlier episodes. They saw that increasing. They got the impression that things are running down. To be honest, rather running out of money, Anno's worsening depression, I think, made it harder and harder for him not to go into his contemplative states.
Yeah, like the series starts psychoanalyzing his characters more and more. Because, and the last two episodes are the penultimate version of that.
And because I feel like we haven't really covered this, Deiko Anno went into very severe depression throughout this. And it only got worse as the story went on.
Things
like the sarin gas, like, depressed him further. Like, he actually rewrote the story to some degree and just kind mm-hmm. of you can really see how. It's him trying to fight his way out of his own concerns.
Yes. It all comes down to the core question of the series of can humans live together?
I kind of hope so. I mean, our species is a social animal that evolved to work in groups.
Yes.
We're all by our own. We're going to get eaten by bears.
They come out and say it very early. They mention the hedgehog's dilemma and keep referencing it as the series goes on.
Yeah.
I love it. Such a simple thing. Hedgehogs can't get close together without hurting each other, but then they freeze in the cold.
Yep. It ends up using this metaphor of everyone is incomplete and needs others to fill the gap, but they also naturally reject others because of that natural fear we have of people that aren't ourselves. And like instrumentality, the antagonist goal of this entire series is essentially a mass suicide of the entire human race to try and like, make everyone closer to God.
Okay, complete ego death. We find out like to have their minds and essence linked together into a great whole.
And like
this is informed a little bit by end of Evangelion. But my theory of this ending is that it's what human instrumentality looks like from the inside.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
The very end where the theater room that Shinji was sitting in shatters apart is in fact the lowering of his personal AT field, and then he joins with the others. And that room shatters, and suddenly Shinji is surrounded by all the characters clapping for him and saying congratulations in turn. End. That's it.
It is a tear-jerking finale. It got me to my emotional core. It is also deeply unsatisfying, and I understand completely why people would get mad. But at the same time, it's some of the best episodes of anime I've ever seen.
Wow, a compilation of congratulations scenes in anime, which openly
reference
ripping from it.
Wow, yeah, I call it the congratulations ending. It really does feel like one of those like old video games or something where you get to the end and you just see a screen that says congratulations, and maybe one of the characters is giving you a thumbs up or something like
that. And Ronald Reagan decides if we can go get a cheeseburger.
Zetsubo Sensei, Asobi Asobase. Some really dark series use that for.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, like, on the end of Evangelion, you know, again, no spoiler alert here, but it ends with Shinji and Asuka being left outside of human instrumentality while everybody else is dissolved in the LCL, or as the fandom often calls it, the Tang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I've seen other explanations where people argue that that what Shinji's doing is he's rejecting instrumentality, bring everyone back, and that's why everyone appears. So there's so many arguments of what's happening there. Like, it's another very symbolic element.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever the case may be, like, Shinji realizing that he can let other people in and he can be like proud to be himself is kind of like where he should end up if he's to be a complete person. But also, he might just be in a little mind palace right now because everyone's dead.
And end of Eva, I firmly believe, is a completely different ending to be chosen. Like, they're not the same ending to.
They're not the same ending, especially since at the very least, Shinji is part of human instrumentality, and in one, he's not.
Yeah, I can see why they might be two sides of the same coin, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The thesis, antithesis, and then I would say that rebuild is synthesis in that regard.
Mm. I do like a lot of the psychoanalysis that comes up through it.
It's so cool.
It's really weird. Like, a lot of it, there's a lot of repetition. But that often is representative of somebody trying to work out something difficult or scary in their mind.
Like, you really can see it as Anno just trying to use psychoanalysis on his characters and be like, okay, how can I figure out how to help you out here? I'm your therapist and I'm talking to you. Let's work through your problems. And they frustratingly don't want to open up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
like I said, and that's so what caught, and that led to hostility. And I think that's why Anno was so mad enough that when he made his later version movie, he introduced more things to make everyone uncomfortable and then just said, basically just put up your letters like, here's why I'm doing this, you guys.
Yep.
Yep. Now, End of Eva, I will say, it has things to say, has points to make, but.
Yep. We'll probably come back to it later. I would like to do another mini log about both End of Eva and Rebuild of Eva, but that is for the far future. That's it for this week. We're getting back to Higurashi next week with the first three chapters of episode 2, Watanagashi.
Find out how many crimes the characters commit.
Yes. And
it's a lot.
A lot of crimes.
And I don't mean the bludgeoning murders.
I will also construct my conspiracy board about what's going on in Higurashi.
Oh, boy.
I like that we're doing it with this and not for Eva.
Yep. All right, then. I mean, yeah. I would rather make a conspiracy board about a story that's about conspiracies. I guess Ava's kind of about some conspiracies too. That's it for now, I think. I think we got to get this wrapped up real quick. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm John.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Matt.
And remember, a good story is best enjoyed with friends. Thank you for listening to Backlog Dialogues. If you liked our show, please leave us a review that Rena would find cute. If you want to dig into our dark history, you can find our archives at www.backlogdialogues.com. Join the discussion on Twitter at @backlogdialogues or on our Discord server. When They Cry and all associated properties are owned by 7th Expansion and Manga Gamer. Console versions by Intergram. Please support the official release.
Look, official Amphibia art with the characters drawn as the kids in their school uniforms.
Oh, no.
It's literally done by a crew member. It has them, like, in a specific pose, and they're in, like, the vest outfits.
And, of course. And white shirt.